Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lincoln on Lending, David Lincoln.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us. April 29th, 2013. We are flipping through the calendar. It just seems like faster and faster all the time. We're excited to say thank you for you tuning in and excited to have our first-time listeners joining in. There's many of you, a lot of people stacking up. You know, anytime we have our two special guests on today, David Stevens and Austin Tillman, and this is the David Stevens with United Guarantees. Well, I always use that name first, kind of gets everyone excited. But it's like David Stevens says, I spell it right. The other guy over there at the MBA doesn't know how to spell his last name, so it's spelled with a PH. But we always have fun. Austin Tillman and David Stevens with United Capital Markets will be with us a little bit later in the broadcast as we talk about loan servicing, the economics of it. There is so much that we are going to discuss there that we just got to get right into the broadcast. A special thank you goes out to our sponsors, United Guaranty and Alamode, for being here and making this possible. We appreciate them and their partnership. Head over to our website. Check out the web on our website, Lincoln on Lending, and their ads, and you can click through to each of their respective company websites. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. You are always so faithful to bring us an update on the segment on the market. So talk to us, Joe. What's going on today?
Well, today we've been higher. We're back to about where we ended the day Friday, so about 3:30 seconds off the high for the day. But, you know, we're real close to the best level we've been at for the year. You might remember, Dave, following the March non-farm payrolls report, which was way better than expected. We have been on we were in a pretty steady decline up until that report came out. And since then, we've seen a nice little turnaround. And we are back up to essentially the same mortgage-backed security price and mortgage rates as we began the year. So it's been a nice little recovery. You know, much of that's been due to continuing sort of weaker economic data than what we had seen in the first part of the year. And also central banks with the central bank bond buying program going on, and you know, most recently with Japan and making their announcement. So back to the best levels of the year.
That's amazing,
isn't it?
You look at it. Go ahead. There's a lot more other stuff. There's just going to be a lot. I'm looking over your notes, Joe. There is so much.
Well, there's a lot going on this week. Today, core PCE came out. It was unchanged for March. It's only 1.1% higher than a year ago, which has got to make the Fed feel fine about continuing what they've been doing. I'll get into that in a minute. Personal income was a little short of expectations, but pending home sales were better than expected. So, you know, the mixture of data today has caused a little bit of movement around, and like I said, we're back at unchanged levels. We've been as high as +3, so any further drop, we could be looking at unfavorable price changes today. Last week, it was a very quiet Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, as it had been the week and the week before that. Last week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, I had never seen the market be as quiet, as little volatility as there was. I mean, the movement intraday was like from a 2 or 3:30 second spread. It was really incredible. But then on Friday, we got market moving news. Fortunately, it was market moving news that moved MBS prices higher and mortgage rates lower. But unfortunately, it was because GDP came in weaker than expected. The consensus was for 3. It came in at 2.5. But the nice thing is it's better than what it was in the fourth quarter, which was barely positive at 4/10.
Very positive.
Yeah. Earlier in the week, we did see housing data, new and existing home sales came out. Both were pretty close to what was expected and about the same as it was in the prior month. Durable orders, which is pretty volatile, but it fell pretty far short of expectations. But the jobless claims that came out last Thursday were positive. Well, they were better than expected. and consumer sentiment's improving. So,
jobs are. I mean, it's not jobless claims are just something you're rejoicing about.
I had to catch myself there.
Less
than expected, which is a good thing. And you know, just generally, we've seen that most of the data that's been coming out, both in the U.S. and around the world, has just been a little weaker than what people had expected. And so, you know, it's important right now, generally, because there's a Fed meeting coming up.
That's right.
You know, slower economic growth.
Any changes in their bond buying program?
We're not going to see any changes to it, but we are going to be looking for what they say about it. You know, the last meeting there was more discussion. You know, each of the last couple of meetings, there's been a growing discussion about when to slow it down. Not to stop it, but when to slow it down. And with the economic news that's come out recently, and with both CPI being very tame and the core PCE being very tame, inflation is not an issue. I think we'll hear less of that this time. And I think that'll be, you know, not a huge market mover, but it certainly won't hurt mortgage rates as the Fed members continue express a need to continue the bond buying program.
So this week we do look forward to what Fed speak will be, and then what other things are on the calendar for us to be mindful of?
Well, the Fed meeting announcement or statement comes out about 2:15 on Wednesday. Yeah. On Thursday we're going to hear from the ECB. They're having their own meeting. They don't have a set time, but early in the morning sometime Thursday we ought to hear, and the market is expecting them to actually cut their interest rates. And if they don't, I think it'll be a surprise. They too might get into a bond buying program. You know, Japan did it. We did it. Why shouldn't ECB do it? It wouldn't be a surprise to see them announce something like that. And that too would be good for our mortgage rates. After the ECB comes out, the Friday non-farm payrolls comes out that's the measure for April. 150,000 jobs are expected. You'll remember last month there was only 88,000 jobs. Unemployment rates expected to stay the same. Now, those are three really significant events and should be paid attention to. In addition to that, there is manufacturing data, the Chicago PMI and the ISM index both come out this week. Chicago's on tomorrow, and the ISM comes out on Wednesday. So busy week. Could be a big week for movement. So be aware.
Got to have the MBS quote service to be able to stay up on all that. There's so much happening, and when you have these kind of markets, you know, last week was slow, but when you didn't need it, you don't think you did. You always need it because it's sitting there. When is the volatility going to
be? You never know.
You never know. That's why MBS quote line is so important. Stay tuned. We've got Paul Mollo coming up right after the break. Stay tuned. He's got some updates and headlines. I always love hearing what Paul's following, the stories he's chasing this week. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market,
whether you're in the office or on the road.
See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to mbsquoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial.
mbsquoteline.com.
646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Good to have you with us. Again, we have the fortunate blessing of having Paul Mollo takes time away from his computer following all the stories that's going on in the industry to join us. We appreciate you, Paul, taking a few minutes out of your busy day. Paul, again, is writing the new blog for Inside Mortgage Finance on behalf of Guy Sakala and the whole team there at Inside Mortgage Finance. We're really privileged to have you with us, Paul. What are the new stories that's got your attention this morning?
Well, bunch of different stuff at IMFnews.com. We have, we have some leftovers from Friday. There's a lot of talk about what happened at that White House mortgage banker meeting last week.
Yeah.
One thing we're hearing is that the White House wants to tinker with HARP yet again. They might change the implementation date, meaning that loans that were originated after 2009 might be eligible. The one date we're hearing is sometime in 2010. And I guess the question is, well, if you move the goalpost back, how many more loans would suddenly become HARP eligible? And were the loans written in 2010? Wasn't the underwriting pretty tight and prices were starting to stabilize? So we're not sure how many more HARP customers could come out of a 2010 book. I guess that's the big question.
Yeah.
I mean, the industry loves the HARP program from what we could tell. It's been a godsend for many people at B of A.
Yeah.
Also we recently reported on IMFnews.com that apparently it looks like B of A and Fannie may be getting ready to bury the hatchet on their dispute. They've had buyback disputes. You might recall B of A settled earlier in the year, but B of A still was not selling new purchase money loans to Fannie Mae. That could be changing, and that would be very interesting, because right now about 91% of what B of A is doing is refis, and a lot of that's HARP stuff, and that's also something we reported on IMFnews.com. Today we got John Bancroft was crunching the first quarter profit numbers for the publicly traded banks in the mortgage space, and it looks pretty decent. Obviously, gain on sale margins have slipped a bit, and that's expected, so that's out there. Cole Taylor Mortgage, we have a story today and on IMFnews.com about how they're still in the market to buy servicing. Cole Taylor is interesting. Here's an example of a bank that got heavily into the mortgage business, just as it hit bottom. In early 2012, they had just $1 billion in servicing. Now they have almost $11 billion. They're buying MSRs. They just got their Ginnie approvals, and they're about to open a call center. So that's an interesting story, the Cole Taylor story. Tom Ressler of our staff has got an update on what's going on with the QM and mortgage bankers and the whole battle over, what goes into that 3% limit on points and fees. That's big news for, mortgage bankers and loan offices everywhere. So that's what's going on out there. IMA has some packages on the market for servicing. I know Mountain View is working on a couple of deals. Phoenix is always out there. Prestwick's got some stuff out there. So there's a lot of interesting stuff. I know Clayton is very busy in the due diligence space, as a lot of those firms are. There's a lot of talk about, that maybe the second quarter is going to be pretty decent for the industry. And there's some talk more about what may or may not happen with the single platform securitization project going on at Fannie, Freddie, and FIFA. So there's plenty of news out there today. So that's sort of the long and short of it. That's called Cliff Notes in high school. We get
Cliff
Notes, and instead of reading the book, we'd read the synopsis. Consider this the Mortgage Cliff Notes version.
The Mortgage Cliff Notes of IMFnews.com. And you can get the rest of the stories, all of it in great detail. And I'm really interested. John does such a good job. John Bancroft does such an amazing job of crunching the numbers for you guys. I've been doing it for years there. And it's what he turns out of information that's in the public domain. It's just amazing what he turns out. It's phenomenal. I mean, he brings you the most meaningful stuff. And I just can't encourage our listeners to make sure you check out the website, www.imfnews.com. Paul's articles, along with the other team, rather the team there at Inside Mortgage Finance. It's really great. Tell John how much I appreciate his data. I look at all the data that's out there swimming. He makes it meaningful, Paul, and you make the news meaningful. Appreciate you tuning in. Say hello to Guy and the rest of the team, and we appreciate you taking the time each week.
Thanks for having us. Have a good one.
Always a pleasure. All right. So Alice Alvey. Bye-bye, Paul. It's always good to hear the updates on all the news, and then you bring us the rest of diving into the legislative aspects. So, Alice, good to have you on the broadcast. I'm looking over your notes today, pages and pages, and give us an update.
Well, hi, welcome everybody. You know, Paul, I love that Paul's still got so much news on top of, you know, we're still trying to keep you updated on what's going on the legislative front. We've got a couple of things that we're watching. Just posted is House Bill 1779, and it says to amend the Truthing Lending Act to modify the definition of a mortgage originator and a high-cost mortgage. There's nothing else out there I've searched, but the title is intriguing, so I'm going to follow it for you and stay tuned next week. Maybe we'll have some detail on that one. But there is a Senate bill that was introduced that was getting some attention on various news media. There was an article by Gretchen Morgenson in the New York Times that I thought was good, kind of summarizing this. There's been a few articles, and then, of course, the press release from the Senator Brown and Vitter out of Louisiana, Brown out of Ohio, that they're trying to close loopholes for the giant banks. Banks over $500 billion would have to hold common stockholder equity of at least 15% of their consolidated assets to protect against large losses. So this is almost double the 8% of the risk-weighted assets that are currently required under the capital rules that are established by the Basel III. Well, you know, the big thing, too, is the terminology in there, having to use the consolidated assets and taking out this risk-weighting option that has been somewhat of a loophole in how those numbers are calculated. I'll leave that to Andy Schell and the brilliant CPAs and Joe Farr of our call here to dive into all the detailed implications. But interestingly enough, you know, obviously the Independent Community Bankers Association highly supports this bill. So, yes. Because for the smaller community banks would remain unchanged for their current risk. So those of you very interested in what's going on with the big banks, check that one out. Also, one of the pieces that we're watching for you is that we did get the proposed rule back on April 19th. I talked about this last week, where CFPB is trying to define that QM a little bit better and trying to define the small servicer definition and also clarify the underwriting requirements. So listen to last week's show to get the detail on that. I have not seen that posted yet. It looks like it's going to be a short comment period, at least the way the proposed rule is set up right now. It looks like it's only going to be a 30-day comment period. So those of you who deeply understand how all the nuances related to the underwriting of those QM loans, really, we need to get into that detail. This is a rule you're going to have to jump on quickly because you won't have a lot of time. If you remember, the good news from this was that once a loan received and approved eligible, there were times that you wouldn't lose that approved eligible status from automated underwriting defining your QM, even in the event that perhaps the loan became a repurchase. So there's a lot of issues, a lot of gray area in there that you want to make sure CFPB lands on the right place for us in common sense in defining when a loan in a repurchase situation could lose its QM status. So check that one out. Don't waste any time. We'll let you know also next week if that actually does get posted. One last thing, too, Dave. You know, we talked a lot about when FHA was transitioning their net worth requirements, and it seemed like 2013 was a long way off, but here it is. You know, May 20th of 2013 is when that small business definition goes away for FHA mortgagee definition. If you remember, you could, if you met the small business definition, you only had to have a net worth of $500,000 to be FHA approved. May 20th of this year is when everybody has to meet that $1 million mark. So that's the big change this month. I'm assuming most lenders, you know, have prepared for that ahead of time if you were going to lose that status. But I'm sure there's some out there who are going, oh, I forgot about that. So May 20th,
that's right.
Get your net worth up, May 20th.
Right? Yep.
All right, that's my report for today, Dave.
That's it for today. Well, we appreciate you, Alice, bringing it to you. And you and your staff do such an amazing job of collecting all this data and bringing it to us each and every week. Appreciate it. Valuable information. Folks, stay tuned. We're going to be right back. Remember, we got David Stevens, with spelled with a PH, and Austin Tillman with the United Capital Markets Group, talking later about loan servicing and the value of it. Is this the time to get into it? What's it worth? What's the economics? We're going to get into it in detail right after the Profit Doctor. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Looking for a full-service mortgage training and consulting company to fit exactly what you need? Mortgage U is your ultimate education and information resource used by lenders to execute high-impact, high-quality training throughout the organization. Mortgage U instructors are mortgage professionals
providing classroom and web-based delivery
and has the most sought-after training manuals in the country. Mortgage U has a proven track record performing customized training programs for hundreds and even thousands of employees both live and online on everything from application through loan delivery and insuring. Call Mortgage U today at 800-278-0200 or visit us online at mortgage-u.com. Welcome back to Lickin' on Lending. Our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here's David Lickin.
Welcome back. We've got the Profit Doctor. He took time from his schedule. You know, I think we're going to have to buy you a private jet, Profit Doctor, to get you around to every place, all the places you've been. Good to have you on the broadcast with us. And give us an update. What's on? What is going on in the market? And then how did that webinar go?
We're doing a lot of M&A work, and what's interesting about M&A work, it's kind of like Dave Lickin at the senior prom. Now, Dave Lickin walks into the senior prom.
I was a scrawny kid back in that one.
No. We know you were the Aspen ski coach. So
well, now
Dave Lickin walks into the senior prom, walking down the row of all the girls sitting on the edge, and they're going, pick me, pick me, pick me, pick me. And so, you know, you went through an analysis and decided on which one you would pick, and we're not going to go into why, but that's kind of
no,
like
they
M&A.
Actually dove for cover is what they did. Well, we won't go there. It's got a lot of pain associated with it. That's the old. So that's a good metaphor. Okay, let's go with the story.
Okay,
let's run with that.
That's
do
the metaphor.
This, though.
Dave walking through the prom, all the girls going, pick me, pick me, pick me. Why did you pick the one that you picked? And that's like M&A. M&A is everybody going, pick me, pick me, pick me. And you got to ask, okay, why? Why you versus the other one? And what is it that's our selection criteria? And this is what it's like. Everybody wants to get M&A'd. Everybody wants to get picked. Everybody wants to sell their company. Or not everybody, but a lot of people do. And one of the things that we've noticed recently in this trend is that as we've reviewed companies for acquisition, what we're seeing is that there's kind of two clumps of companies. And among all the companies, they do loans well. They make loans, they sell loans, the loans get purchased quickly, the repurchase risks are fairly minimal. So from the core of kind of blocking and tackling mortgage banking, they do a good job. So then why doesn't that automatically mean that they're a great target for M&A? Well, the reason is because anytime you're in an M&A transaction, you have to be able to predict an outcome. And you'll hear on Wall Street people talking about trailing EBITDA or multiples of trailing EBITDA and then assigning certain factors to economic potential. So what people are doing is they're trying to look at the past to predict the future. And in doing that, there's an underlying premise. And that underlying premise is that they're measuring and managing results. They're measuring activity, they're measuring financial results, they're measuring operational results, they're measuring operational efficiencies, they're measuring all kinds of stuff, because if you measure stuff, you have to measure stuff to be able to manage stuff. And to be able to get through an M&A transaction, you've got to be able to manage it, you got to be able to measure it so you can manage it. And if you can
manage it, then you can measure it.
Everybody says that, right? Harvard Business Review. Everybody talks about you got to be able to measure it before you can manage it, and you've got to be able to manage it before you can implement a transition. And dealing with a transition, you have to go through a transition to be able to grow it, and then you got to be able to grow it to maximize the return for an M&A activity. So if you're not measuring it, you can't manage it, and you can't transition, you can't grow it, and you can't maximize an M&A result. Even if you're making great loans, you can't do the M&A right because you can't measure the results. So it's more than just good loans. It's measuring your activity. It's managing your business with the efficiency and sophistication that's available today. So it's not just what we do. It's how we do it. We've got to measure our results. We've got to have KPIs. We've got to know how many files per underwriter, how many files per processor. We've got to understand our turn times. We've got to understand how to predict our future. We've got to have our 90-day cash flow, our two-year financial forecast. We've got to have all this stuff. And we're looking at companies that have no clue about this stuff, and yet they want to get bought, And the investor price is going to get cut in half because they're not managing their business well. So if you want to get a maximized M&A price, you better be able to manage and report your business well because you're measuring results. So there you go, Dave. So
measuring
what
results.
What did you use to take the pretty girl?
Well, you know what? They all ran from me. I kid you not. That was one of those times where, you know, my dad said, you know, you had this extended awkwardness about you. So I always said, Dad, what is going to happen? So it finally happened. So it worked out. Thankfully, I married a pretty woman. So, but what was the criteria? You know what? I'd like to say it was character, but you know what? It's like the M&A business. It's who looks good. But we're looking at a bottom line. And it really comes down to, do you measure the right stuff? Are you doing the right stuff? You are not, and you're struggling with that, you got to get the profit doctor to come in and pay you a visit. He's doing it. He's flying around the country. So much so, we got to get him a private airplane. He's using Southwest right now a lot. But we got to get him in to talk to you. You can get a hold of Andy by calling him at 512-501-2810, or you can go to our website, mortgagebankingsolutions.com. You can check it out and get his information. Very knowledgeable. Andy, thank you so much for bringing us
that
this
phone
update.
Number, you know, in my phone
I gave mine. Oh, my gosh. Yeah, but it's 2812. I'm
right.
So sorry. Yeah, 512-501-2812.
If your number, 512-501-2810, is for a good time, call 512-501-2810. 501-2810.
Find out how to get your company more valuable. Call 2812. Oh, you are too funny, Andy. So appreciate you, man. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave.
Lots of stuff. Tony Garitano. He is on the line. We always love listening to Tony.
On the radio.
You're on the radio. You sure are on the radio, my friend. That's probably like my wife knocking on the door when I'm doing the radio program. No, I'm on the radio, and you realize you're not muted. It's good to have you with us, Tony. And I also want to say, I meant to say at the beginning, what an honor it was to win the Innovations Award this year. Thank you so much to the group there. And again, for those of you or listeners that don't know, the radio program, Lickin' on Lending, won the Innovation Award for 2012. What an honor. Appreciate you for honoring us in that way.
Congratulations, Dave. We were excited to recognize you guys.
Last week we were talking about the fierce competition going on in the LOS space these days, and I thought we'd continue that conversation again today. Got a lot of feedback on it. There's so much there, and so many are looking again at the LOS space or continuing changes, so there seems to be a fair amount of disruption in that part of the marketplace. How does the LOS compete these days, Tony? What's your perspective, your observations?
Well, I think the LOS of the future has to be flexible, it has to be scalable, and it has to include industry best practices. And I think that that's why, you know, in particular, Progress in Lending just heard this morning that NetOxygen has rolled out a new LOS called NetOxygen. Yeah, it's called NetOxygen Zip. And the idea is that it's
I like the name.
An
we
the
need
box.
Oxygen in our industry. we are hurting for air sometimes with the regulation that Alice reports on. So NetOxygen, okay. So you know, are we going to see more of these new entrants into the market?
Well, I think you will from existing companies. So
okay.
NetOxygen,
yeah, that's not a new
example,
company.
Dave,
but it's a new version.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a new version of their LOS that's more scalable, more out of the box, less configurable, and I think that you will see existing companies like WePro Gallagher in this case come out with new solutions and new offerings. I mean, I talked last week about Calyx coming out with their new PATH LOS, so I think it certainly is a trend that's going to continue.
What will determine which LOS companies last and which will fall short of what the new needs are, in your opinion?
Well, you know, that my answer might change after January of next year, Dave.
And why is that?
From what I hear in talking to a lot of them, meaning LOS companies and lenders, the CFPB changes that are going to go into effect, I believe, January 14th of 2014 are problematic. They require the loan origination system. I mean, on the part of these are big changes, Dave, and the LOS has to do a lot of heavy lifting. So the reason why I say my answer may change is because if these LOS companies cannot update their system adequately, you're going to see a lot of lenders switching between September and December of this year. And if the LOS did not comply adequately to the lender's satisfaction, I think you'll see a lot of lenders switching their LOS in early 2014.
Yeah. And we're actually hearing about it already.
It's going to be in flux.
Yeah, we are actually hearing about lenders talking about that. An increasing number of companies are calling us because we help and advise on that. And I know you are a great resource in that. So people want to check out, what should I be doing? What's the movement? What's going on? You can go to progressinlending.com, www.progressinlending.com, and you can check out the wealth of information that's on that site. And also, you have a great publication, Tony, that kind of keeps everybody up to speed on it. I want to personally thank you for what you do for our industry by just following all of it. And your area, you're going to be a busy guy this next year tracking all the changes, my friend.
I think so. It's exciting.
It is exciting. Change can be, you know, embrace it and love it and prosper or regret it and go, oh, son of a gun, more change. I don't like change. Well, yeah, it's coming. Better deal with it. Tony Garitano, good to have you with us on the broadcast. Appreciate you taking time out of your busy week. And would you greet your family there? I know you're bouncing a few balls around there, and you take time to carve out and be with us. It really is appreciated, Tony.
Thank you, Dave.
You bet. Folks, we've got Austin Tillman and David Stevens coming up right after the ad break. Say that fast. We'll be right back after this brief message.
Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry.
If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan,
if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit,
broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging,
financial and accounting services,
or meeting your capitalization needs.
If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
Good to have you with us. We appreciate you tuning in and being a part of the broadcast. One of the privileges we get to have on this radio program is we really get to get some intelligent, great guys on the broadcast and talk about stuff that's really relevant to what's going on. And we've been watching the trends in servicing for some period of time, and we're really blessed and honored to have Austin Tillman, who is the President Chief Executive Officer for UMC, United Capital Markets, Inc., and his trusty sidekick, David Stevens, Chief Operating Officer, Chief Financial Officer. Now, I can read their bios. Like Joe says, man, get to the meat and potatoes. Let's get into it. Don't bother with the bios. And I agree with you, Joe, because everyone knows these two guys are really smart, both 30-plus year veterans. In case of David Stevens, it might be even a little bit longer than that. But we appreciate you, these two gentlemen, taking time to join the broadcast again. Again, we had them on the broadcast a while back, a year ago, when we were talking about servicing, and what a lot of feedback we received. Very positive. David and Austin, so good to have you here with us today.
Thank you, David.
It's good to be here.
Now, it is good. It's always a pleasure. When you when we really start looking at servicing, what's happening with mortgage servicing? Let's start in the global macro. Bring us into the world of what's happening with servicing.
Well, David, it's good to be back on your show. You know, we were first on your show back in February 2012. We talked about the substantial financial benefits for producers to retain mortgage servicing rights. At that time, leading companies had already begun retaining servicing, and hundreds more have started retaining servicing since then. Many of the servicing portfolios of our customers have grown to the point where they're now very significant cash flows to their owners already.
Yeah, it's no question that it has become a big deal. Do you think that it's done? Most people think that mortgage servicing is an asset to own. Do you think everyone's got there?
You know, the signs are strong. We see it more and more as a topic at national and local conferences. Even hedge funds and private equity investors are now seeking to purchase MSRs, and the deals are attracting many, many more bidders than just a few months ago. The GSEs have picked up the pace, and hundreds more now are approved servicers than were a year ago or so.
Well, hey, Austin and Andy, great to have you on the show, both you and Dave Stevens. A quick question for you about as the population of bidders starts to increase and the view on MSRs and picking up existing servicing rights kind of starts to heat up, what are you seeing is some of the bidding interest is changing? What's the color on this? How's that going?
This is Dave. A year ago, a small package might attract, just three bidders, where last quarter we saw just under 10 bidders on most packages that we heard about. And now the expectation has gone to 10 bidders.
Wow. Well, you know, you think a little bit back on my Economics 101, you've got more buyers than sellers. So what's that going to do to the prices?
It's hard to generalize since each package is different. But we think the price is now 40 basis points higher than it was at the end of last year.
Wow. Should have got in when the bidding was good. Now the price is up.
Joe Farr, let's get you to jump in here. And we have Alice and Joe both joining us on this set of interviews. Joe? Well, Joe may be having these mute buttons that aren't darn things get us. Have you the prepayment penalties or the speed, excuse me, not prepayment penalties, but the prepayment speed slowed that much? You'd think it would have with the rates where they're at.
No, not at all. It's all about the discount rate, the rate of return that the bidders are having to pay. When there were only a few bids, the bidders were discounting the cash flows around 15%. And now with more buyers, the discount rate might be down to 11 or 12%. So we've seen a reduction in the return, but not prepayment speed slowing.
That's interesting.
Austin,
my
Joe.
Apologies. I just had your – I realized I had your mic muted, Joe. So my
usually it's my problem, so.
Usually it was me.
But,
yeah, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Austin or Dave, is that kind of discount rate something that we can expect to continue to improve like that?
You know, it's hard to tell. The more bidders there are and the more frustrated they get in not getting packages, the lower the discount rate's going to be.
Yeah. Well, talk about who the bidders are. Is it the same old group, the big guys?
No. Where the bidders were almost all banks in the past, now they're almost all non-bank private companies. In fact, banks are now often the sellers.
Well, hi, folks. Welcome to the program. Why do you think that the banks aren't more active bidders?
We think it's because their production operations are filling their appetite for MSRs right now. OMSRs, which are originated mortgage servicing rights, are still better than PMSRs.
Why is that?
Well, OMSRs have no tax basis, and production aggregators pay less for OMSRs than others pay for equivalent PMSRs. The economics favor OMSRs in several powerful ways.
Well, and that's true for smaller servicers as well as the big guys, right?
Absolutely, Joe. Over the last couple of years, the biggest number of new servicers has come from former producer-only operators. And now they're retaining much more or all of their servicing that their production operations can generate. This is a pretty profound change since even beginning of the year.
Wow. So as these new servicers come online, what do you see happening with that new group of servicers?
Well, they're starting to mature, and they're starting to mature as servicers. Their balance sheets are starting to swell with MSRs, and the cash flow off the servicing now is more than offsetting the lost servicing release premiums from when they were only producers. Again, this is a pretty profound change.
Well, I think that sounds like a great story because I know people were a little nervous in the beginning, so it sounds great that they're getting into that stage.
Yes, we think it is. At a time when the GSEs are limiting production throughput for some producers to a multiple of their net worth, it's nice to build net worth with MSRs that also contribute to future cash flows at very substantial yields. People are actually starting to link their net worth growth to their OMSR growth.
That is really interesting. Have the historical high gains on sale profits played a part in this OMSR accumulation?
Absolutely. Particularly in 2012, we saw record gain on sale allowed the originators to forego the servicing release premiums that they would have realized if they sold all of their production servicing released. It was a very favorable environment and allowed many new servicers to grow faster than they would have been able to in years past.
Okay, but you know that's all the good stuff, and that's what happened in the past. And at some point, we're going to see the refinance slowing down, and we're going to see margin compression like we always do. So what's going to happen now? The gains on sale are going to start going down a bit.
Well, we've already seen some of that. The gain on sale is already off maybe about 40 basis points. But for those that started retaining OMSRs in 2012 and earlier, the cash flows from those older OMSRs already allows the producers to continue retaining servicing at a similar pace that they did in 2012. Unfortunately, for someone brand new to the servicing business in 2013, they're going to be able to accumulate OMSRs at a slower pace than they might have in 2012. Still, it's better late than never.
How are all of the new servicers handling the delinquencies on their newly accumulated MSRs?
Well, since it's all new production with great appraisals and tough underwriting, delinquent loans are simply not a big issue. Our newer clients that have only been servicing for 1 to 3 years can typically count their delinquencies on one hand. Almost all the new servicers are using subservicers, so they're ready if something should cause higher delinquencies in the future.
So they're running around the building going, oh, my gosh, the Smiths didn't make their payment.
Well, yeah, it sure sounds like there's nothing to be concerned about, but there's got to be. So what are the things that you think that people should be concerned about or things to worry about?
Well, Joe, the biggest worry is the balance sheet and earnings volatility caused by mortgage prepayments.
Yeah. Well, you know, rates have got to go up from here, right? You know, can they possibly go any lower?
You know, those are famous last words, and we've been hearing that for a very, very long time. You know, when we looked at the last quarter, based on one survey that we subscribed to, the primary mortgage rate, which started at 369, later peaked in March at a little over 4%, and it's down to 379. Those are 30 basis point swings, and on a $10 million MSR investment, that could be as much as $1 million swing in value.
Wow.
Of course, everyone's happy when it's positive, but when it's negative, there's a lot more excitement.
Well, what kind of problems does that kind of volatility cause?
Well, for one, your equity can drop. If you have $10 million in equity and lose $1 million in MSR, it's going to flow right through earnings and as a direct hit to your equity. With GSEs tying production limits to a multiple of equity, it becomes both an operational and financially critical.
Well, yeah, but, you know, the rule in the past has always been servicing up, production down, servicing up. So when the MSRs lose value, doesn't increased production offset the losses of the loans paying off?
Lots of people believe that, but it doesn't work that way. Production gains almost never offset the MSR losses.
Well, why would that be? I guess it depends on how big you are or something, huh?
Not really. If you remember, the MSR value is, by the evaluators, is determined by estimating the cash flow over 360 months and then discounting it back to the current value. And when the cash flow is estimated using, let's take a 10% CPR rate, constant prepayment rate, and rates drop 25 or 30 basis points, the estimated prepayment speeds need to increase to 16 to 24%. On a portfolio of 10,000 loans, you might have an increased prepayment of maybe 300 loans in a month, and you replace those 300 with additional new loans, everyone would congratulate themselves on a perfect hedge. Unfortunately, the MSR evaluator will project that kind of increased prepayment speed continuing for the next several months and write down your MSRs to reflect those future prepayments, not just the current prepayments.
Yeah, but I don't like it that way.
Well,
nobody.
You
got
to talk to some other people in Denver.
So the MSR write down might be a multiple of the actual payoffs for the most recent. Well, but I don't like this rule. Okay,
yes.
So but the point is that the MSR write down might be a multiple of the actual payoffs of the current quarter. Well, what are you doing?
Yes. Yes, that's the problem. That is stating in a very simplified way, but the production hedge just doesn't match up well with the MSR price volatility. And remember, it's an asset on your balance sheet, and that price volatility is changing your balance sheet, particularly your equity. Companies have demonstrated the fallacy of the production hedge over and over through the years.
So what's an MSR investor to do?
what's an MSR?
Great question.
Well, you know what? That's our business.
We hedge MSRs. I keep you up. Do you like that?
Yeah. I love that. That was a softball.
Great segue. Yeah.
Well, doesn't that cost a lot of money? So, like, only the big guys can afford that?
You know, actually, there are lots of urban myths in this business, but MSR hedging generally adds to income.
Huh. So you're telling me that you're going to do a hedge and make income. I thought hedging was supposed to be a cost. What's wrong with that?
Well, if you hedge with an insurance approach, hedging will always be a cost to you. But if you use a portfolio approach, like our clients do, the hedge instruments produce income.
Yeah, that sounds a little foreign to me. I gotta know more about that.
Well, our clients invest in a portfolio of treasury futures and options. It's like investing in U.S. treasuries. Everyone understands that treasuries throw off interest income. Also, treasuries gain value when MSR lose value and vice versa. So you end up with MSRs throwing off income and the hedges throwing off income while offsetting each other's change in value.
Well, I like what you said about the offsetting value. That's kind of the whole point of the hedge. But doesn't owning the treasuries tie up a lot of capital?
Well, we use the futures and options markets on the CME, the exchange-traded futures and options, rather than owning the actual treasury bonds themselves. One futures contract on the board gives you the earnings potential of $100,000 investment in treasuries, but also gives you that much valuation risk. It's pretty levered.
Well, you know, going back to my finance classes on options on bond futures, I remember the word volatility. So is that as volatile as it sounds?
Yeah, it is. It's a volatile asset, and typically you wouldn't own these kinds of futures and options unless there was an offset. Of course, MSRs in this case are your offset. So owning MSRs allows you the opportunity to invest in a highly levered treasury position that is inverse with respect to its price performance.
It's just so fascinating to listen to all of this and realize that you could be making income in that. But they don't just give away treasuries options, do they? Treasury futures and options, do they?
No, you're going to have to open a brokerage account with a futures dealer, which will require a credit approval. Also, with each trade, you'll have to post initial collateral, and for each position, and you'll either receive or pay cash for every dollar of change in value.
Okay, but it still sounds to me like not everyone can qualify. Is that right?
That's right. We think that most will need about a $10 million net worth or equity to qualify. Also, there are liquidity demands that will need to be addressed and answered.
And how big are your private clients? We have clients of all sizes. I'm sure a lot of our listeners are going, how big do I have to be?
Well, so far, $20 million in equity is about what we see. However, we don't think we've tested the lower boundary yet. We've heard that there might be some leverage that is associated with MSRs that used to be a feature that everyone could take advantage of, and that really hasn't come back, although we are hearing some banks that are starting to lend on MSRs. We think that a very disciplined, smaller company can still take advantage of these financial hedges.
This is Joe. I got to get back to the treasuries and all that, the hedge mortgage stuff. Why wouldn't you just use TBAs or the mortgage things to hedge the mortgage things?
Well, just because TBAs are future mortgage securities doesn't mean that they're a good match for the duration and convexity of MSRs. In fact, 10-year treasuries are a much better match. Also, TBAs will add to your negative convexity of the overall MSR hedge position, adding to costs. You'll have to spend money to offset the added negative convexity. The treasury market is unmatched for liquidity and predictable price performance, where TBAs have liquidity issues from time to time, and price performance is much more unpredictable. In addition, the Fed is dominating the MBS market with quantitative easing, distorting the price discovery and liquidity.
So does that leave you other options besides treasuries?
You know, there are. Swaps have price performance similar to treasury futures and options, so swaps and swaptions. However, most of those contracts, the swap volume is in the over-the-counter market rather than an exchange-traded market. So that leads to inefficiencies and costs and really takes some of the smaller customers out. When more of the swap market moves to exchange-traded, the swaps will be more attractive, and we're certainly monitoring that all the time.
Well, I can tell you already that I am really enjoying my secondary market lesson here, and I'm going to have to go back and listen to this three times. So,
yes,
but so this sounds very complicated and not without risk. It's a challenge.
Well, it is a challenge, and explaining it is the real problem.
Yeah.
We typically have several meetings with prospects to help them understand what they're getting into. Obviously, servicing is a remarkably volatile asset. But even if there's one person in the organization that fully understands what we're saying in our first meeting, we still have many more meetings to bring key officers, owners, and board members fully up to speed. And I will tell you, trying to explain it on a radio show with no visuals and little chance to stop makes this doubly hard.
Well, so it's hard to explain.
Well, we spend a lot of time working with prospects to help them fully understand how our program works. They have to get to where they understand it well enough to explain it to their boards, their regulators, their investors. We help with this constantly. That's really a major function of our job. But the company officers are really the first line of contact with others.
Well, it sounds like I might need you in the meeting room with the regulators. Will you do that?
Yes. We're called to meet with the regulators
yeah.
a few times
every year. And you look forward to it
every
day, don't you, David?
You not every day, but occasionally. They're our favorite people. It's interesting to see that their biggest question is always to understand how our hedges create income without speculating.
Yeah.
Many assume that if there's a profit, there must be speculation. We've always been successful explaining how that's not true.
Well, that's interesting. How does a mortgage company get started with hedging? I know there's some people going, I got to go, like Alice, I'm going to go back and listen to this several times. So they need to talk with you. So how to start? What's the best place to start getting started?
Well, typically they have an MSR evaluator, and again, there are lots of them in Denver. But we get a valuation of their portfolio and an estimate of its sensitivity to interest rates and prepayment risk. With that information, we can show them their risk in real dollars along with the income that the hedges will throw off. And there are usually several meetings to bring important decision makers up to speed, and that happens either by WebEx or, you know, typically as things get further along in their understanding, by a trip to them.
You know what I'd love to do is get into I'm looking at our clock and looking at our notes, and there are a lot of people get confused about, you know, the value of servicing, what are they getting paid for. And, Joe, you and I were talking about it with David and Austin just before the broadcast, and I'm looking, we've got about 2 minutes, which is going to open up a whole other segment, a whole other broadcast on this topic. But, Joe, go ahead and ask that question you were asking just before we got on the air.
Well, I asked a couple. I'm not sure I know which one you meant, but
well, a lot of misnomers about, you know, the servicing schedules that people are seeing out there, I believe is what where we were talking.
The SRP.
Well, that's true. And then all the you know, my big question for Austin and Dave is, somebody that gets into servicing, it's a long term proposition, and you've got to have some sense of where it's going to go or what you're going to do, you know, years down the road. So how do you let people get the comfort to know that if they are beginning to invest in servicing, that it's going to be a good deal 10 years from now?
Well, Joe, it is a long-term investment, and it's a terrific offset. And we talk about, in GE terms, the mortgage business being two long-cycle businesses, the production cycle, which we've really been in since 2008, and then the servicing cycle, which is a bear market in interest rates, and we're probably 18 to 36 months away from that. So we have a pretty long runway to get servicing on our books and enjoy the benefits. You know, what happens in 10 years, who knows? But I think the prospects are good for valuations of servicing going higher.
Well,
Andy Schell?
On that point, Austin, we just taught hedging basics for our accountants last week, and we were talking about positive correlation to changes in interest rates and negative correlation to changes in interest rates. And what I hear you saying in simplified is that as rates go up, MSR values go up, and that they're positively correlated to changes in interest rates. So is that accurate? Is that the way to say that, that as rates go up, MSR values are going to go up as well?
Absolutely. You know, I think there was the beginning of a question that is probably another show, and that's how one sells servicing release today and what the aggregator grids look like. And,
yeah,
you know, the thing that we talk about, the thing that we talk about is the billboard price, which is the unadjusted price for MSR, which could be anywhere from 175 basis points to 250. And there's some people that really believe that that's what they're getting for their MSR. But when you actually do the math, it's substantially lower than that with the price adjusters, loan level price adjusters, par price adjusters. So the secret behind the scenes is that you're not getting the billboard price on those sheets.
They're getting more like 70 basis points or less.
So let me make sure I understand what you just said. When I look at my rate sheet from Chase and they say my SRP table is 2.6, you're telling me I'm not getting 2.6, I'm getting 0.7?
That's right. I mean, if it were really 2.6 and you had 25 basis points of servicing fee, then Chase would be paying a 10 multiple, and they're just not doing that.
Well, we need to have a show on this topic because a lot of people are going to be scratching their head on that one.
Yeah, a lot of people
just
stress the rate sheet. Well, we got to come back. When can we have you guys back? I'm going to call you right after this broadcast or shortly after this broadcast so we can discuss having you back on. We're scheduled to have Mitch Keiter on next week, folks, talking about the regulatory environment, the rules that are
seem to be changing, and Mitch has just got some updated information, and we'll have him on next week to talk to us about it, so be sure to tune in after that. And I got a sneaky hunch that the week after that we may have Austin and David back talking about this. It's so important you understand it. Folks, we appreciate you tuning in. Again, a special thank you to our sponsors, United Guarantee and A La Mode. It's always good to have you tune in. Tell your friends about this broadcast so we can be a part of their method of getting information. A lot here, folks. Stay tuned. Have a great week. And come back and listen to us next week. Thank you. Appreciate you.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.